One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Chapter 34, The Department of Mysteries. Harry wound his hand tightly into the mane of the nearest thestral, placed a foot on a stump nearby, and scrambled clumsily onto the horse's silken back. It did not object, but twisted its head around, fangs bared, and attempted to continue its eager licking of his robes. I'm Vanessa Soltan.
And I'm Jolie Doggett.
And this is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. Jolie, welcome back.
Hi, Vanessa. I'm so excited to be here.
So good to have you. Our only announcements are that, everybody, you can subscribe for ad-free episodes on Apple Podcasts. And our Every Flavored Bean this week is inspired very much by this chapter. Harry knows that he should be closing his mind to his dreams, and yet he did not do that. And I would argue it doesn't go great for him. And so Jolie and I are each going to share a story in which we did something that we knew we shouldn't do, and then it turns out that we shouldn't have done it.
It's very much so inspired by this book, for sure.
I knew I shouldn't do it. I did it anyway. And then I was like, guess what?
It's
shouldn't
done.
Have done it.
It's done, though. I can't wait to tell this story because that really was how it was. I was like, well, I did it.
Jolie, you are telling the story today on the theme of success. What story do you have?
I am telling the story on the theme of success because my definition of success is going through a bit of a evolution, a bit of a transition. I'm someone who I think on paper appeared at one point to be successful. I followed all the steps to success that were laid out to me by my parents. Go to school, get good grades, don't mess it up in any kind of way, go to college, get a job. And that actually worked out for me after a period of being unemployed in the middle of the worst recession in American history. Yeah, eventually I got it all together. I got a good job. I started earning money and accolades, got myself a little blue check mark on all of my social media accounts before that stopped meaning anything. At that point in my life, success meant earning money, earning respect, being good, being someone my parents could brag about. And I did all those things, and I'm very proud of all those accomplishments. But recently, I reached a point in my success, some might call it a peak, where I was working for like a really big company and earning way more money than anyone in my family had ever done. And it was all super impressive and super cool. And I quit. I'm not doing this anymore. And here I am. It's almost a year later exactly. And I'm not earning a lot of money. I am not attached to any giant name or corporation. My parents don't really know what I do at all. And I'm not doing anything that has been expected of me or laid out for me or taught to me as a way to be successful. So now I'm asking myself, do I consider myself to be a success? Am I successful? And I'm thinking about it, and I will say I am. I'm very peaceful. I am back at home. I am no longer in a city that I hate to work at a job that I also hate it. I'm healthy. I'm sleeping good. I'm a lot less anxious. I'm able to spend more time with my friends and family. I'm excited most of the time, which is very different than being stressed out. I'm writing more. I'm doing things that I enjoy more. I'm building a community of people who are interested in writing. I'm learning something new every day. And does that meet that metric of success? And I would say yes. I would say I would consider myself to be successful because I think my definition of success is evolving from what I was taught as a child of follow these steps, earn these things, meet these expectations, and you are successful. Now I'm less attached to what others expect and what others might understand, and I'm closer to the things that I am obsessed with and the things that I want to do and experience. And I think there are multiple paths to that version of success. Like there are multiple things you can want to do and there could be multiple ways that you can get there and you can get there and turn around and go a different way. So yeah, I'm redefining success. I'm experiencing success, Jolie's version, right now.
And I'm re-recording some old success moments.
Re-recording some old success. And in that process, I'm also redefining like who I am and what it is that I do. And also learning how much we attach our self-worth to our sense of success, which actually brings me to Harry a little bit. Under my evolving definition of what success is, could we call what Harry and his friends do at the Department of Mysteries successful? Did they have a successful mission? Did they meet their expectations? Did they learn something along the way? Were there moments of success through this? And does it not going the way they expected to mean they were not successful? Because again, my life is not going the way I may have expected it to at one point. I would still consider it pretty successful. So let's talk about that, Vanessa. Let's talk a little less about me and what I'm going through. And let's talk about success in the Harry Potter books.
One of the things that your story made me think of is the etymology of success. And the ancient understanding of success is that it just means the outcome of something. So it could be a good or bad outcome, but it is an outcome of an undertaking. So it has to be something that you did with intention. So a maritime voyage just would eventually, when it was over, have a success. It was either a bad success or a good success, but if it ends,
it happened.
It happened. It needs to have an ending. And so what's interesting to me about that is that I think that you are exactly right, that we outsource our definition of success without stopping and wondering what values we are holding, what success will actually look like for us, what we want success to look like for us. And instead we're like, well, the world says that success is this, and so I'm going to just do that. And I think that pausing and wondering what our definition of success is, what our actual desires are, is a key component to whether or not we're actually going to feel like we crossed a finish line or just like it ended.
It's funny, like the pausing part really stands out to me because that's something that Harry does not do at any point.
Harry is so bad at it.
He's never like, in multiple times people have asked him like, wait a minute, can we just take a minute and think about nope? We're just going, we're going full force. We're starting, we're on this mission. So I think the pause is useful. And maybe even that's where I am in my own life right now. I'm in the pause state where it's like, okay, where are we going next? And how can I make that Jolie's version of successful? So yeah.
What value am I going to hold myself to?
Or am I just focused on the mission? And usually it's a mission set forth by other people.
Well, I cannot wait to talk about whether or not this Department of Mysteries visit is a success. But first, watch me be successful at a 30-second recap.
You're always successful at this. You set my standard.
Can you please count me in?
Yes. Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
So they all go to the Ministry of Magic, all six of them. And they straight up are like, hi, we're here for insurrection. And they're like, cool, come in. And so they go to the Department of Mysteries and it's really confusing and a lot of scary things. And they see brains and then they just see like all of these prophecies and they start running down the hallway and they're like, wait, what's going on? It was this number in my dream. And then Hermione is like, I know how library systems work. I think it's in this direction. And then Harry finds his prophecy and he grabs it and it's warm. And then Lucius is like, thanks.
Ooh, good. Good one. To me, Walter. Like, I just,
give it.
I remember reading that for the first time and that really stood out to me. Like, why are you repeating to me? Like, complete your sentence, man. Like, say what you're going to say. You did a great job, Vanessa. I'm going to fill in some details.
Jolie, on your mark, get set, go.
Okay, so Harry and the group is going to get on Thestrals, which are invisible creatures unless you've seen death, and they fly them, and Luna has to help a lot of people on because Luna has seen death, and Ron is like, this is bizarre, and they fly over to the Ministry of Magic, which is for some reason completely unstaffed and allows a bunch of teenagers to walk in and do whatever it is they want to do. They explore a lot of rooms, which reminds me that they are teenagers because they're just obsessed with everything, the brains, the birds, whatever. Sirius isn't there, and they're just walking down the aisle, and Harry's feeling weird, and then he sees a ball with his name on it, and he's like, ooh, I'm gonna grab it, and then Lucius is like, give it.
Give it.
I like that you've improved upon Rowling's writing.
Basically.
So, Jolie, you see a very obvious failure in this chapter, which, in order to understand success, tell us the definition of failure. What is the failure you see here?
The biggest failure I see is within the government system of the wizarding world in Great Britain, which is the Ministry of Magic. The fact that six teenagers and winged skeletal horses could just walk right into the ministry, like with name tags on, like it's really chill. They just walk into a phone booth and they're in a very obvious way. And they're like, hey, we want to rescue someone. And they're like, cool, come on in, present your wants or not, whatever you want to do. And they're just walking straight through. They're on the elevator, like all the systems are in place to get them where they need to be, which appears to be successful. But to me, it just shows how unsuccessful Ministry of Magic security is. And it's hilarious to me, but it's also bringing up, like, why? Why was it so simple for them to just walk into this ominous space with all these really weird things? It's called the Department of Mysteries, and it's not even that mysterious. It's real. It's just right there, right on the platter for them to get into. And I found that to be a failure on the part, once again, of the adults in this book series, like continuously dropping the ball.
Yeah, I want to read this little section from the chapter to your point of, so Harry, what he says is, we're here to save someone unless your ministry can do it first. And then their name badges print rescue mission. And what's interesting about this is, like, it does seem to be some sort of AI, right?
Yeah.
Like when you call the doctor and you're like, make an appointment, you know, and like screaming at
representative.
Yes.
That's me on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. So that does seem to be what's happening, right? Because then, like, the ministry AI voice is like, have a great day. So the question to me is, like, is it actually working? Is the system just to, like, welcome people? Is it to keep muggles out? Is it to keep, like, goblins out who might have an accent, right? Like, I'm always just like, because this works, I agree with you that this should be some sort of security system. And like someone should be alerted to the fact that six teenagers are flying off of campus and going to do, like, it is wild that nobody has caught on to this.
Yeah, the security at Hogwarts also is failing. They could just go. I don't understand. But yeah, I hear you.
It's like, what is this system actually designed to do? It might actually have succeeded. It's just there to keep muggles out.
That's the question, though. Is something successful because it works? Like, I was working my job, did not consider myself to be doing life successfully in that moment.
Right.
And yes, something works. It is operational. But does it succeed in its mission to help to get people into the Ministry of Magic? I don't know. Because you also bring up an interesting point about, like, who is able to get in, who isn't able to get in. It's, I don't know. Harry also brings up, like, when he walks, when they get off of the telephone box lift, and he's like, oh, the security guy isn't there. That's weird. Like, he even notices that, like, something is not right about this situation.
It seems to me that the Death Eaters did something here to, like, lower security. And so, like, this is actually part of their successful mission, that it's so easy to get in. And the real failure here is that Harry isn't clocking that. Harry isn't like, it should be harder to get in. Previously, I've had to wave my wand.
Because Harry doesn't have a plan. Like, when you have, like, a plan, when you have the steps laid out towards your success, you can know when you're veering off. You can know when something isn't going the way that it should be going. And Harry does not have a plan. The Death Eaters had a plan. Like, they were successful in their execution of their mission, for sure, in luring Harry to the Department of Mysteries. And you bring up an excellent point of probably setting it up so the Department of Mysteries would be available to them on a platter. They basically did everything except put up an arrow that said this way. Like, again, still had to make Harry work for it a little bit. Maybe tire him out a bit going through all those doors. What would have happened to the Death Eaters plan if they were like, okay, Jenny, let's stay and watch these birds be born and reborn again? Like, it's fine. It's clear Sirius is here.
Harry just kept talking to the Veil.
Yeah, they just hung out. They just decided they were going to hang out by the Veil, or they decided that they were going to just, you know what? Let's go home.
Experiment on some brains.
This isn't working the way I thought. This door doesn't go where I want to go. Let's just leave. Bye.
I know. I would have loved that.
If only.
It gets to the heart of the question for me of, I do think that there are many different kinds of success, but two of the different kinds are like an A-B test. Like, your goal is to drive from New York to Los Angeles, and you successfully did it. You safely arrive at your destination. Mm-hmm. And then there are other forms of success that are a long-term commitment, and the definition is going to constantly change, right? Like, mm-hmm. My goal is to be a good step parent, but as the kids age, my strategy is going to have to change, right? Like, when they're little, my whole job is to keep them safe. And as they get older, it's like to be a safety net, but like they've got to go out and try things. And actually, if I'm smothering them and being like, no, it's not safe for you out there, those same things would become a bad parent, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, when is it fixed and when is it sort of adaptive, I do think can often trip us up, right? Because we won't necessarily notice the moment in which maybe our goal is the same. I still want to be a good step parent, but
your method changes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's hard to notice when those transitions have happened. And so, So I think Harry loses sight of his goal here, right? He is like, I'm here to check that Sirius is okay. Yeah. Oh, Sirius is okay, but like also there's this other thing, right? Like, he allows his metric to change, which I think sometimes is a good thing, and other times you should be like, Sirius is fine, let's go, like, we accomplished our mission, time to get out of here.
Right. I think you bring up an excellent point about how changing your mind, changing your strategy, pivoting, I think is a really important step toward reaching, but also maintaining, like, a successful journey. Like, if you're hitting a wall, don't keep running into that wall. Like, turn around and do something else, do something different. And Harry and the crew definitely have to make a change a bit later on after the end of this chapter. And we can argue later offline if they do that successfully. But I think something that helps in your ability to make those changes is when you have a plan, is when you are able, and you can always plan on the go, right? That's what Hermione does when they're in the room with the spinning doors. Like, they realize, like, oh, this isn't going to be as simply laid out as it was in my dream. And so Hermione's like, okay, like, we're going to make an X mark where we've been and make sure we don't go through the same space again. And that was a change to their original plan of just walking along, which had been working out for them up until that point. They were hitting a wall and they decided they were going to do something different. They made adjustments. Their plan evolved. I wish it evolved in a different way. I wish it evolved in the way that they were like, maybe we should tell somebody what's going on. Like, maybe someone should hop back on a Thestral and get some help. One of us should have stayed behind. I don't know. But we're where we're at. Why am I surprised by these children?
Yeah. I think it's because these are actually really hard decisions of like, when is it, okay, now we have a different opportunity. We made it safely here. Is it time to switch our goal? Or is it time to sort of like cut and run? Or when am I engaged in determination and perseverance? And when am I engaged in like actually self-harm? And I'm just like beating my head against a door.
Harry has a moment of regret in the chapter a little bit once they get into the room with the orbs, which we'll later learn is called the Hall of Prophecy, where he realizes that as they're walking closer to row 97, I believe, that Sirius is not there, which again, on paper, you can be like, good job, Harry, you succeeded. Sirius isn't there. You can move
turn
on.
Turn around and run.
But internally, and I totally relate to that, it's just like, this did not meet my expectations of what was going to happen, that I was going to be on a rescue mission, as my name badge says, and rescue my godfather, defeat Lord Voldemort in the Harry Potter series at book 5, and that's going to be the end. So it's interesting. You can be successful and still be like disappointed in the outcome for sure, which that brings us back to the etymology of success. Like, it's about the outcome, regardless of what it is. Like, was there an outcome? And can you be satisfied with that? And Harry cannot. Harry is not satisfied with that. And I imagine that Ron, Hermione, Luna, and Neville are probably also not satisfied with that. They're good friends, though. They're not going to say anything. They're going to be like, okay, like, we'll talk about this later, but I don't see Sirius over here. I don't know.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by Prose. Casper, I just got a wonderful, wonderful haircut.
It looks so good.
Thank you. I feel great with it, but I cut off over a foot of hair, and that means my long hair was sort of pulling my curls in one way, and now that I have short hair, I need a totally different hair care routine.
Mm.
Luckily, Prose is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And so I used the review and refine feature, and I was like, yes, I still want vegan hair care products. Yes, I still want to smell like a lavender field, but my hair is no longer long. It is short to medium length. Please send me a different formula of shampoo and conditioner.
Prose is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/Harry Potter. So you get your free consultation and then 50% off at prose.com/Harry Potter. That's prose.com/Harry Potter.
I'm going to say something that I don't know if I believe or not. So help me. But you can either have your goal be a feeling of success, or you can have your goal be a metric of success, but you can't have it be both because they won't necessarily line up, right?
They don't always line up.
They don't always line up.
Always is the word there, whereas like sometimes they do. Sometimes you reach a metric of success and your feeling of success is the same, but I think a lot of times it doesn't.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about, you know, there have been like some very silly goals that have felt which is like super important to me. Mm-hmm. The first time that I like got my mile time goal, right? Like, and whenever I do like a personal best, I'm like very proud of myself, mm-hmm. and I actually can feel a real sense of success. But I don't know, it was like a lifetime goal of mine to publish a book. And boy, did I make a lot of excuses about how it didn't count as a real book, right? I was like, well, I only got this book deal because I have a podcast, right? Like,
yeah.
And it was this external measure of success that did not hit as an emotional success in any way.
Yeah.
And I think that the key to that is to forgive yourself for not having the feeling rather than to like pursue the rush, mm-hmm. right? Rather than be like, so what can I do for this book to feel successful? It's just like, okay, like this book didn't give me that rush. And like, that's fine, right? Like, I wish that Harry was just like, oh, I didn't emotionally get what I thought I was going to get from this. But so let's just like moonwalk out of here anyway.
Get out.
Yeah.
We can make it fun, everybody.
Exactly.
Okay, two things. First of all, you wrote a book. You should be very proud of yourself. It's amazing. Read Praying with Jane Eyre. It's available wherever books are sold. But two, I think it also works the other way, that like sometimes you get the feeling and you don't reach the metric. Like your story about running a mile reminded me of like when I started running again a couple of years ago. Don't do it anymore. But I started running again a couple of years ago. And I ran a mile again for the first time. When I was in high school, when I was doing physical training for ROTC and playing soccer and field hockey and was in gym 5 days a week, my fastest mile was 6 minutes and 6 seconds.
What?
I know.
Never
I know.
In my life.
The girl was running. Last year, I ran a mile and I finished it in about 17 minutes. It took me a long time, right? But, like, the metric is not as impressive to, like, other people to be like, oh, guys, I ran a mile in just under 20 minutes. And everyone's like, okay, I can walk a mile in 20 minutes, right? But for me, the feeling was enough. The feeling was, like, good enough. I'm like, I am proud of myself. I consider myself to be a success because I have not run a mile in almost 20 years. And so for that to be like the metric, I think that works. But yeah, Harry could realize that something isn't meeting either the feeling or the metric of success. Decide which is more important. And also, importance is really important in this moment because their lives could be in danger. And right. Make a decision to leave. I think that's something that Harry struggled with throughout this chapter because there were multiple moments of doubt on his road to Sirius, on his road to success. And not once did he say, I'm going to do something different. Not once did he heed his friend's advice of like, Harry, let's like, are we sure this is what we're doing? Are we sure this is what we want to do? And sometimes that can lead you to success, right? Where you're just like full force ahead, tunnel vision. I'm focusing on this. I'm going to get it done. Like, I'm not going to procrastinate. I'm not going to stop. But sometimes that can cause you not to see, to the point of my story earlier, the multiple pathways to get to what you want. There's not always just the one thing that you have to do. And Harry didn't realize that moonwalking was definitely one of his options. It's always an option. I don't know where you are, what you're doing, but I promise you, moonwalking is an option. Consider it.
Yes. Whenever anything awkward happens, I think just like moonwalk your way out of
moonwalk
that room.
Your way out
just
of
get
it.
Out. Mm-hmm. Cut your losses. But I think that you said such an important word here, which is leader. I don't think that Harry didn't mean to lead this. He didn't mean for other people to come. He has not clocked in that he is a leader in this moment.
Yeah.
He's actually a scared child in this moment. And what he needs is someone else to be being a leader. And in the absence of leadership, he is doing his best. And I think that it's okay also for our identities to shift.
Yeah.
You can be a doctor and then it's your kid and you're not a doctor, you're a parent.
Yeah.
And like you have to be like, I'm actually in a hot state right now. Like I am not in control. And so this actually needs to be somebody else's decision. I need to wait a few days to make this decision. But these are just like impossibly hard things to notice about ourselves. And so yes, Harry has not realized that, like, he's actually responsible for these other people, but also nobody else has realized that he is just a scared kid.
I think his friends realize. I think that's part of the reason why they go with him. They're just like, hey.
Yes, true.
We're not going to let you do this on your own, obviously. Even though he is very much so like, please leave me alone. They're like, no, you're going through something. We're just going to. Poor Harry. He's just not getting anything he wants today. Poor thing. But yeah, Harry, I think, doesn't have, or in his mind, does not have the luxury of pausing. And I think sometimes in life, we don't have that luxury. And Harry is like, I'm just going to move full force ahead. But in that space, he falls right into the Death Eaters trap, which everything is coming up Milhouse for the Death Eaters today. They are just, everything's working out there. They got more than what they want. They got all these kids here. They got the prophecy at the end of the day. They got Harry to fall for Voldemort's plot. It's just, the Death Eaters were really successful. So can Harry and the Death Eaters be successful at the same time is the question. If they both have the opposite goals, mm-hmm. can't they both be successful in this moment? My argument's yes, but...
Your argument is yes. I would argue that Harry doesn't actually get what he wants, right? Okay. Like, it's too soon to tell. He was not able to articulate to himself that what he also wanted was for not only Sirius to be safe in this moment, but Sirius to not die in the next chapter, and for he and his friends to, like, leave safely.
Mm-hmm.
So I would argue that Harry and the kids are actually not successful. But I do understand okay. if we're measuring on a very specific metric.
Was there an outcome?
Right. There was a, yes. In the ancient form of success, yes.
Did you do it? This is what I will say. I think there were many moments of success, but he did not reach his ultimate goal. I think that he got out of Hogwarts, success. I think that he rode a thestral for the first time with no experience, success. He got into the ministry, success. He got to the Department of Mysteries, which most people never even get to. Look at you, you're already reaching a new metric, success. You found the Hall of Prophecy, success. You found something you weren't even looking for. How's that for a pivot? It's just like, ooh, new goal unlocked. Let's do it. You didn't find Sirius. I mean, 6-1. I think that's... a successful trip. But I also hear what you're saying in that, like, yeah, you kind of messed this up a little bit, Harry. This was a bit of a failure, but I do believe that failure is part of the road to success a little bit. I'm getting philosophical now.
Yeah, I just think that if Harry had sat down and, like, waited what he cared about, Sirius getting out of this alive would have been very high on yeah. it.
If he just let Hermione lead, he would have. Sirius probably would have gotten out of there.
Forget
alive.
When in doubt, go to the library. When in doubt, have Hermione step in and lead.
Yeah, because Hermione was asking all the right questions even before this chapter of just like, what if this is what Voldemort wanted you to see? Maybe we should ask someone else. Let's do anything other than what it is that you're doing. And like, let's get out of here. I mean, that's part of success too, right? Having the right people around you to
absolutely
help you figure things out.
So Jolie, we are doing Havruta again this week. And the way that this works is that I will ask you a question and I will also supply an answer to that question. And you will respond to my thoughts, but then you will ask a question in response. And the belief is that everything that we say is part of a truth, that truth is complicated. And actually, in order to really, you know, define a truth, you need a whole conversation. So my question for you, Jolie, what is going on for Neville in this chapter? Neville is the person in the chapter who keeps being like, hey, how are we going to get back out of here? Hey, right? Like, he's very much a voice of reason in this chapter. And yet throughout it, he is just ignored, right? There are like non-answers given back to him of like, well, Sirius will be with us when we're on our way back and Sirius will be able to figure it out, right? Like, and my answer is that Neville is playing the role of the skeptic and of like the sort of like foot on the brake pedal. Mm-hmm. And that I think without him, this would have gone even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, at some point, I'm not blaming Neville, but I wish Neville would have screamed, right? Been like, nope, I have fair points. Let's listen to me, right? Like, sometimes you feel like the party pooper by being the brake on something. You're like, okay, this car is careening and everybody's having a good time, but I know we're all going to be whatever tomorrow, regretful tomorrow. You feel like a bummer being the brake. But if you notice you are the brakes in a situation, I just think maybe scream louder, because you probably want to do that for a reason. So what are your thoughts? Is Neville like functioning as car brakes here? Is he doing a good job?
I think Neville is functioning as the seatbelt, if we're going to use a car metaphor. Mm-hmm. Neville is the protector, I think. And I think that's the role he's played from the very beginning of this series. He's always going to hop in and be like, hey, don't do this. Not to stop the action, but just to be like, this is not safe. I think that even is a reason why he even goes on this journey. I think he goes in a way to kind of protect Luna and Ginny a little bit, because they're going. And even if Neville doesn't really want to go along for the ride, he's just like, well, I'm not going to let them do it on their own. Like, this is what we trained for. Probably convincing himself. I can do this. Like, I can use a wand and no left hand, right hand, got it. So yeah, I think Neville is the protector in this space. And I think in part of that role, he is going to ask a lot of questions. He's going to be like, how are we getting out? How are we getting to safety? Because safety is the most important part of this trip.
I love that.
Everyone else is on a mission to find Sirius, and Neville's on a mission to watch everybody else.
I love, like, wondering in situations where I'm confused, what part of the car am I? Being like, am I the engine? Am I supposed to be the engine right now? Am I neutral? Maybe my job is to park us in neutral.
Well, inspired by your question, what part of the car do you think Ginny and Luna are? Because to me, Ginny and Luna, they're not part of the original trio. They're not even Neville, you know? Whereas Neville, he's been there from the very beginning and always been part of their antics. Ginny and Luna, especially Luna, she was just introduced in this book.
Brand new.
And she is like already part of the main cast, and she's getting the same paychecks as Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox. Like, and it's like, I want to know, like, what role do they play? What part of the car are Ginny and Luna?
Ooh, it's such a good question. I really do feel, to some extent, they are just like extra people in the car, right? They are passengers. You know, like Harry is driving, Hermione is navigating, Ron is like valet, Neville is a seatbelt, and they are passengers. And like, sometimes you're glad to have extra passengers, like when you need to, you know, push the car up a hill. You want the extra people who can help push. And sometimes those extra passengers, you're like, we only have a certain amount of water. I resent that you are here, like, as an extra drain on resources. I've been watching a lot of Amazing Race lately.
Oh, wow.
And size is something that, like, sometimes is really, like, the bigger you are, the higher the virtue on Amazing Race. Like, being tall is really helpful because you can reach for certain things, right? And then there are other times that really, really, really being as small as possible is really helpful. Works. You can crouch, and, like, actually weighing as little as possible means that, like, you can get across this thing. And I think that that's the thing about passengers, is just like, you always want a seatbelt. You always need a driver. But passengers are sometimes a great virtue. And other times you're like, damn it, I wish I was actually in the opposite situation.
The only place I disagree with you in that statement and your answer to my question is, I think Ron is the engine. I think Ron is the battery in Harry's back always, where he's
I love that.
Where it's like, Ron is going to be like, whatever it is, got it, on it. He's not going to ask questions. He's going to tell Hermione to stop asking questions. We're just going to do this.
Yeah,
I get you. That Ginny and Luna.
No, you've changed my mind on that. I love that. Like, the engine does whatever the driver tells it to do.
Vroom, vroom. Like, we're just going.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Ginny and Luna, I agree. I think I would say they're passengers. But you point out that passengers can sometimes be a hindrance, but sometimes they can be a help.
Yeah.
They are extra people. Ginny as we see in the next chapter, is very useful. And like when they're playing keep away with this magical orb, like having more people on their side, the better.
Yeah. Jolie, thank you so much for doing the sacred practice. And I will now never not think of Ron as the engine.
Get you a Ron, man. Ron is everything. There would be, it's Ron in the sacred text. Ron is the moral of every story. And we need to put more respect on Ron's name.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This week's voicemail is from Emily.
Hi, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text team. This is Emily. My pronouns are she and her. I've just finished reading and listening to Book 5, Chapter 23, Christmas in the Closed Ward. And there's this one moment there that I can't get out of my head when Harry is trying to figure out if he's been possessed by Voldemort. And he talks to Ginny and Ginny says, well, you know, you could ask me because I was possessed by Voldemort. And Harry says, oh, yeah, I forgot. And Ginny says, lucky you. And I experience this moment, especially this time for some reason, as a total gut punch. Because there's a way in which I too forgot that she had experienced this. And the text lets you forget because it doesn't get mentioned. It doesn't get mentioned all this time until, again, in Book 5. And I just feel so sad to know that Ginny is carrying this around with her. And even if she's doing all her work and all that, it's still there and can be triggered by an experience like this. And I feel really sad about that. And I'm also led me to think about Neville and how in this chapter, we finally get a sense of what it really means to have parents who are locked up in St. Mungo's for the rest of their life and how that trauma has completely shaped Neville, but we don't really know it or feel it until we actually meet his parents and see what it's like. And so this is a blessing for anybody who's carrying around trauma or grief that goes unacknowledged or unremembered by people around them. And I hope that you know that the ones that you reach out to share your story with are the lucky ones. Thank you.
Emily, thank you so much for that really beautiful voicemail. I also feel indicted every time Ginny says, lucky you, and wonder about the people in my life who I forget, mm-hmm. You know, what they are going through, what they have gone through. And yeah, I just really appreciate this beautiful reminder and the reminder that when people share with us, that makes us lucky. I think that's right.
Yeah. This voicemail was also a reminder to me that people experience loss in many different ways. And Neville lost his parents, but they're still here, but he no longer has access to them as many of his peers do with their parents, and Jenny lost so much of her time and her childhood and her security. And because those losses were not obvious, it was easy for us as readers and within the pages of the book, the other characters, to forget about them. And yeah, this is a reminder to remember the people in our lives and the stories they tell us and how they may be impacted very differently than us by things that are going on in our lives. Thanks, Emily.
Jolie, we now each get to bless a character from the chapter. Who would you like to bless?
I'd like to bless Harry, just because it's hard when everyone is watching you and you just want to do the right things and the right things are not working out. And it's hard enough to be disappointing to yourself, but it's really hard to disappoint other people who you care about as well. So I just want to send a blessing out to anyone who things are not going according to plan and you're feeling like you're under a microscope a little bit and you're a little scared. You're not alone, and this too shall pass, and you'll get through it, and you can try again another day.
That's beautiful. I would like to bless Luna. Luna, as we said, is a passenger. She is new to this group, new in this book, and yet she's, like, helping people get on and off the Thestrals. She is, like, looking for ways to make herself truly helpful without, like, trying to be outsized in that. And I can imagine me being like, I want to be helpful and, like, trying too hard. And I think that Luna is just, like, always beautifully herself and offers everything she has but does not offer anything she doesn't have. And I think that that speaks to the deep well of her security. And I love that. So a blessing for Luna.
Yay. Yay, Luna. More passengers like Luna.
Absolutely. Next week, we will be reading Book 5, Chapter 35, Beyond the Veil, through the theme of desire. Just a few reminders before we give our thanks. Our next season of What Matters is up on sale now. You can find out more about that year-long intensive course by going to notsorryworks.com. This was a Not Sorry production. We are a feminist production company. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Vanessa Zoltan. We are edited and produced by AJ Uramas, and our music is by Ivan Paisau and Nick Bull. We are distributed by Acast. Thanks so much to Emily for their voicemail this week, to Ariana Nettleman, Julia Argy, Margaret H. Wilson, Nikki Zoltan, Hannah Rehack, Matt Potts, Casper Terkyle, Courtney Brown, Natalie Folkerts, Stephanie Paulsell, and to you, Jolie Doggett. Thank you, as always, a delight.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for listening, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Talk to you next week. And attempted to continue its eager licking of his robes. Gross.
Yeah.
I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And I'm grossed out. And I'm Jolie Doggett.